From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 542, DevOps for Everyone with guest Rob England. Recorded Saturday, June 3rd, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm here at the DevOps Enterprise Summit in London, and I'm sitting with Rob England. And Rob, let me introduce you here as an independent IT management consultant, trainer, and commentator based in Wellington, New Zealand. And Rob is an internationally recognized thought leader in DevOps and IT service management, and the published author of 7 books and many articles. He's best known for the controversial blog and alter ego, The IT Skeptic.
That's me.
Hey, welcome. And, well, you know, you. Two Kiwis chatting. How about that? Although I'm kind of a fake Kiwi. I mean, I was born there, but we left when I was 3.
Right.
And the Canadians, of course, complain I don't sound like a Canadian. And the Americans say, you're not from around here, are you? So, I don't know what I sound like anymore.
You've got a trans-Pacific accent.
That's it, yeah. It's kind of all of the things. But I do like my coastal cities, you know. They've got a soft spot for Auckland and a soft spot for Vancouver and San Francisco and Sydney. All good places.
I'm actually half Kiwi and half Aussie myself.
Oh, there you go.
I have a trans-Tasman accent.
That's true. But to live in Wellington, I mean, I guess it's the capital, but as my experience being down there, pretty rainy. You guys get weather.
The global warming's not all bad.
Oh, it's getting nicer.
It's getting better every year.
That's funny. You can't say that out loud, Rob. It's not.
Did I say that?
That's not politically appropriate at all. Yeah. Of course, we're at the nexus of DevOps right now. Gene Kim and co. have been driving this model forward. You've been involved with them for a while.
I am one of the, there's not many people in the world apparently who have been to every single DevOps Enterprise conference there is.
Wow.
US and UK.
Wow.
And this is now, what is it, my 6th or something? I've been to every single one.
That's awesome. Yeah, and amazing group of people. Place was packed today.
Incredible conference. Yeah. Gene really knows how to generate the content.
Mm-hmm. Get people engaged, get folks excited about it. It's really interesting. For the most part, everybody on stage is from a company that's putting a practice into place.
Yeah. He really focuses on practitioners and as he says, experience reports. And there's not a lot of talking heads, whereas, you know, in the conference world generally, you know, there's a lot of that. In fact, hey, I cut my own small swathe doing service management conferences, and really I was just a talking head. I mean, I was based on my own practice, but a lot of it was ideas and concepts I was talking about, not experiential reports, whereas Gene really focuses his speakers on, we don't want to hear what you think, we want to hear what you did.
Right. And what came out the other side. And when I've interviewed him, especially the last couple of times, the big push has been on this DevOps for horses, not unicorns. Because it's easy to excuse, if you're working for your average company, these, you know, achievements of these extraordinary companies. You just say, well, that's the unicorn. They can do that. Yeah. The regular mortal company can't do it.
You know, the old consulting joke that all of our clients are exactly the same because they all think they're unique. You know, I just every time it's, oh, well, that's great, but it won't work here.
Yeah, that seems to be the common mantra. Is it? But this is your practice. Are you able to defeat that mindset?
I do my best. Mm-hmm. So in Wellington is government town.
Yeah, right? That's a challenge all by itself.
Well, it is, yeah, but also it's fertile, right? Because they're all under the pump to do more with less. They're all under the pump to be digital, right? New Zealand's very much like the UK, transforming government to digital government. And yeah, so there's that pressure there. So they're all moving.
Right.
And
the budget's being cut whether they want them to or not. They've got to do more with less.
Yeah. And we're getting quite extraordinary results with government. So once you overcome that initial resistance, and I talk about having a model where, you know, you're in an exploratory phase, just trying, you know, people are always trying some agile or trying a bit of automation or they've got some tools, but there has to be some sort of trigger event. It's like Cotter talking about that sense of urgency, right? Something has to trigger
we're not going to be able to achieve this important goal if we don't find a better way to do things.
Or let's have a catastrophic project and, oh my God, this must never happen again.
Right.
You know, so never let a good crisis go to waste.
That's it. It's funny how often these are failure-driven moments. Yeah,
it is. Absolutely. Mm. And so once you've got that trigger, then it's a lot easier. Then if you've got the executive support and the hearts and minds of a decent proportion of the people to go, we must do things differently.
Right. That becomes accessible, that status quo is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Well, that seems to be the main thing. How do you convince people that status quo is not acceptable?
Well, as I say, I think it's more about taking advantage of something that convinces them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard to generate that compelling event or generate that trigger point.
Right.
I really believe that it's got to be something, you know, we're going to split the government department into two. Or we've got a new CEO who wants to change everything.
So you're not the source of disruption.
So I'm not.
You're trying to mediate the source of disruption.
On it, yeah. So I'm working with Inland Revenue in New Zealand at the moment and the tax man. And there's nothing, they're still in that, I've convinced them, they're still in that experimental phase until that trigger comes along.
Right.
So we're just building foundation.
Interesting. Because I guess the trick here is you've got to be ready when the event comes.
Exactly.
So it does take building some groundwork and passing ideas.
And it might be years, right?
That's interesting.
These guys, it won't be.
No.
It's looming. But
so they can see an impending disaster?
They can. Well, not disaster. With them...
Or crisis.
They're investing billions in completely re-engineering their IT.
Interesting.
Right? So they're building a whole new tax system for New Zealand. Whole new, like complete tear down, replace.
Wow.
New tax system. And that is the first... chunk of that has already landed. The what the world would call sales tax component
right
is already live, and the income tax is the big one, and that's coming. And so the IT, the core, the existing what they call heritage IT
right
are having to prepare themselves for what Gartner would call convergence for this new business transformation, as they call it, to land with the existing core heritage systems. It looks to me like, you know, you see those animations of when a planet crashed into the early Earth?
Right.
That real slow motion, two huge bodies just slowly smashing into each other.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Wow.
And it is very slow-mo, but at some point, the pressure and the pain is going to get to a trigger point, and then they're all going to be going, we need a new way of working.
Right. And it's just all new technology for them as well. They're trying to do stuff mobile and trying to grab all the buzzwords on at once.
Yeah.
And then to also put a new process in place.
Yeah.
A new approach.
Yeah.
It almost seems like too many factors. Like it's a lot of variables.
It's a bold
to
step. They're like in that situation that so many organizations are in, that the death of their mainframe has been announced every 3 years for as long as I can remember. You know, we're going to replace it.
Right.
And so sort of gentler attempts have all failed. And so eventually they've bitten the bullet and said, look, we've got so many attempts to get rid of this system, and we're going to have to just do it, in a big bang.
I've certainly dealt with customers now where we're running out of COBOL programmers. Like they want to retire.
Mm-hmm.
They're on extended contracts. They're looking for a way to get away.
Yep.
And, you know, there's almost a sense of desperation around
there
need to turn this off, because it's not because the machine's not still working. It's because we're running out of people.
We're running out of runway.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it needs to move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one. And then I'm also working with the Ministry of Social Development.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working with the people who bring the money in, and then I'm working with the people who hand the money out, right? The social welfare organization. And they had a catastrophic project a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Public knowledge, right?
Yeah.
It was very public knowledge, right?
Well, anything in, you know, government should be, right? Yeah, we want it to be transparent. Yeah.
So it's all over the papers.
And lovely.
So that really, really was a huge trigger. Mm-hmm. Lots of pain, lots of grief from you know, the frontline business of the ministry, the minister, the executive, IT, very, very, everyone's unhappy. Lots and lots of pain. This new project that just catastrophically landed in a huge explosion. And so that, you know, that was, and then a very visionary CIO who spoke at DevOps
2016.
Was it the UK one or the US one? I forget now. Isn't that silly? Hmm. But a recent, I was US last November.
Okay. He's talking about the struggle.
Yeah, so he talked about the first year of their journey, which was very interesting, of course. And he's very visionary. He's, you know, so there was all this pain, and he got some key thinkers together and thought about it and said, we're going to do DevOps. That's the way to fix this.
Yeah, and of course, we always hear the words, but DevOps represents this cultural shift.
Yeah.
Was it a cultural problem, do you think?
Oh, it was everything.
Yeah.
Right? It was the whole CALMS, right? Mm-hmm. It was a cultural problem. It was a complete absence of automation. It was a whole lot of flow that could be re-engineered and improved. Mm-hmm. It was no measurement and feedback. It was lots of siloed thinking and no sharing. And it was the whole thing. So he had the insight to see that this was what would fix it. And he had the courage to do some real bold pushes to get them moving on the journey. He just sort of decreed, we're going to start doing cadence releases, do it.
Right. You know. And so routine releases of software.
Yep. Every 6 weeks, everything in the house is going to roll out the door every 6 weeks in an integrated monolithic release.
Whether you're quote unquote ready or not.
Well, if you're not ready, you're not on the train.
Right.
Right.
And so then you're just missing those releases.
You're missing that cadence.
Yeah.
But everything that's going out the door is integrated into the core trunk. And it just goes out the door. And it was really interesting that, because, you know, one of the principles of DevOps is that you're going to release, or Agile, is that you're going to release on demand. It's going to be lots and lots of little releases flying out the door.
6 weeks is not even that fast when you think about the DevOps modern practice.
So this is the opposite. This is everything has to be integrated together into a giant release all the way from the mainframe to the Ruby on Rails.
Wow.
And then all of it goes out the door every 6 weeks. And, you know, when I first looked at that, I was like, interesting.
Yeah, challenging.
Know? And this seems to be the opposite of where we should be heading to.
Right.
But I'm now understanding that it was a brilliant insight into the fact that in a horse, you've got these spaghettified application systems, and you've got the spaghettified infrastructure.
Right.
So you have massive dependencies and entanglements that completely defeat the whole theory of
rapid deployment.
You know, rapid deployment.
Sure.
Because it says get rid of all your linkages and dependencies so that you can. Well, that's easy to say, right?
Yeah, but that's the whole infrastructure.
Yeah. So the horse has this issue. And so it's actually a brilliant way to deal with that is to say we're going to have the cadence. And so we started at 6 weeks, and I came in to work with them just after he'd done all this. He brought me in to help drive the cultural transformation and the strategy around it. So they started at 6 weeks, and they achieved 6 weeks with no technology, right? They just re-engineered the way they work. They re-engineered their environment.
Right.
Design.
So they could actually get a build test together that would deploy in 6 weeks.
And they could still get it out the door in 6 weeks, mostly manual testing,
right?
Mostly manual environment builds, mostly manual movement and deployment. And they got down 6 weeks. So now he's said, do 4 weeks.
And punishment for success.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's brave, David. But he's, you know, that has now pressured them.
You have to use automation.
There's urgency to the automation.
Yeah.
Which was coming, but there's now urgency to the automation because of the 4 week cadence.
To make a new deadline.
And so the aspiration is by the end of the year with automation to drive it down to some lower cadence, 2 weeks or even 1 week. So, and for most business contexts, in a horse, when you're not a dynamic, digital, competitive, do-da-da-da-da.
Right.
Right. Then if you say to the business, oh, you missed that train, but there's another one in 2 weeks. That's pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast to the business.
Sure.
Oh, with 6 weeks, there were times when they were like, oh, you know, that hurts to have to wait another 6 weeks.
Yeah, sure.
But if you're on a 2 week cadence, it's like, oh, okay, 2 weeks, fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
For most business contexts, they think that's fast.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting.
Certainly compared to historic IT performance.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's very fast.
Yeah.
Even 6 weeks is pretty fast.
Yeah.
You only have to look back a few years and things take longer than that.
Yeah.
Give me 1 second here, Rob, to pay the bills. Because this episode of Runners Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. And one of the leading projects, called Already, focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time. Humanitarian Toolbox is deploying this application in the field right now in 2017, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. Humanitarian Toolbox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. And we're here in London at the DevOps Enterprise Summit. I'm talking to Rob England and a fellow Kiwi. such as it is. You know, you mentioned in the first half this challenge of government cutting budgets, essentially, and this challenge around cost controls in software development. Yeah. You don't normally see a DevOps practice talking about its costs per se, just that it makes higher quality product in less time.
Yeah.
Have you seen the impacts of cost?
So that's an interesting question. And the way I coached for that with clients is to say, it's like driving at night. Mm-hmm. You know, you should never look at the headlights of the oncoming car.
Right.
But you want to avoid the oncoming car by not looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, you can cut costs by achieving velocity through quality, but not if you're focused on the costs.
Right.
So there's that whole thing of the Dilbert around, we just saved X million dollars by laying off 50 people. And Dilbert says, well, why don't you lay us all off and you'll save a fortune?
You right.
Know, right. You know. if we actually cost cut, we tend to damage.
Right. It's too easy to damage. Whereas if you work for maximum efficiency, there is a byproduct of cost saving.
That's exactly right. It just comes. So if you're faster, then the same number of people get more work done. If you're higher quality, then your unplanned work and your rework drop. And so you just do save money. But
But not by cutting, by being more efficient.
By being more efficient.
That's a very interesting viewpoint on that. I think it's kind of important that the efficiency will come. And you mean, not necessarily you're spending less money, but you're getting more results for the money you spend.
Exactly. And so related to that is that the traditional cost cut is how can we reduce FTEs, right? But again, I coach clients, you're not going to reduce FTE.
Yeah, that's not the intended outcome.
You're just not going to. You're going to get more work done with the same number of people, but the work's there.
Sure.
And the world just gets more and more complex. So.
Yes. But also automation allows those same people to do more work all around. Like this is a productivity amplifier as a whole.
It is exactly that.
Yeah.
But the consequence is not going to be you're going to lay people off. So in some industries, you know, including government, then yes, you're going to reduce headcount over time because of automation.
Mm-hmm.
And in 10 years' time, it's theoretically possible you'd have less people. But as I say, the world
changes. Should be a primary goal. There's other things. There's other services the government can perform.
There's always
there's things that can be automated.
You know, the Internet of Things or something will come along and just the complexity will go up by order of magnitude and we'll end up with the same number of people, but we'll be doing so much more,
which I think is sort of the reality. And I think it's important to talk about that, especially in context of government, where typically you have labor unions and other organized aspects that are protecting their workers very strongly from the sort of heavy-handed manipulations.
Mm.
But I could also see that works against you in trying to change practices too.
Yep.
Is there, what do you do to deal with that?
There's a real lag.
Mm-hmm.
So the one organization is actually going through a rethink of their staffing, shall we say. And there is a whole bunch of people being walked out, not in IT though. As the ministry digitizes, then the need for field people in offices that people can come and interact with goes away.
Right.
So it's those clerical people out in the offices that are being reduced because of the digitization of the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So people can now come more and more through online channels and not have to walk into an office.
Right. Don't have to meet with an individual to actually do their business with the government.
So their staffing levels are falling and the union's not very happy about it at all.
And again, it's like there is the opportunity to retrain. There are services that can be brought in here.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine that IT staff's back. But I would also
Exactly. That's what I keep saying to the IT staff. Mm. It just is getting more complex.
Right.
And not only that, but there's so much work that we're not getting done that we should be getting done anyway.
That's always the joke, right? It's like IT has always had a list of things that need to be gotten to, and the list has never been to none.
Exactly.
Ever.
Exactly.
There's always more to do.
Exactly. So certainly I don't see IT jobs going down.
Yeah.
Even more generally, I've blogged about this a few times. This whole robot's going to take our jobs thing, to me just seems. I always say, I'm sure all the sled draggers used to say, "Who's going to? What are we going to do now that they've invented the wheel? You know, who's? What are all the sled draggers going to do?
Right.
You know, it just. We've always had this all through history, and this whole idea that we can't, that you're going to have a huge resource of people with nothing to do and that some entrepreneur isn't going to figure out how to monetize that. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's counter to all of the evidence to date.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
there's always a new role. And certainly working in IT, it's been crazy like that. It's just like we're never even close to getting to the bottom of our list. There's always going to be new things to do.
No.
I just wonder if you run into people that are simply not interested in the new culture. It's like, hey, I racked and stacked hardware for my whole career. Why would I change?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a bit what my presentation tomorrow is about. It's about surviving DevOps. It's about leaving nobody behind, trying to make sure that we do bring as many people as possible, including the conservatives who take time. There's a bunch of people who never believe it till they see it.
Right.
So you've got to give them enough space to see your early proof points to start convincing them. And there's the conservatives that just take a long time.
Yeah.
And there's that little tail at the end that maybe aren't going to be getting on the bus.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you've got someone that's near retirement age that's worked their career in government on a mainframe.
Yeah.
They simply don't want to retread. They'd rather take that retirement.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm finding more and more they wish they could have retired 5 years ago. They aged out, but they're so essential to the process and they were offered incentives and they're still in. And the moment they can be let go, they will be let go.
If they're going to be paid a hefty redundancy, then they're very happy to be let go.
Well, and I've seen it in situations where they're already collecting their pension. They've then been hired back through a contractor to fill a role. Like they're desperate to retire.
Yeah.
You know, this is, they wanted to be done.
And there is that community, but equally there's a community of others who are desperately frustrated in government and want to do things.
Yeah. Would like to experiment, where the only way to advance your career is to leave.
Yeah.
And the way that employment in most governments is set up, that's very counterproductive. It's extremely hard to get in, even harder to come back. And if it's a place you want to work.
The number of people who have come up to me or to others in the DevOps project area, I hate the word project, the transformation, and said, I was going to leave, but now I'm going to stay.
Right.
Because suddenly I can see some light.
Right. There is a better way to work. And that's, you don't want to get to be an organization where only the least creative survive.
Yeah.
That seems kind of ill, really.
That's weird. And to me, the thing that gets me going every day in this work, the biggest reward for me is watching people blossom.
Sure.
Right. There are people who are oppressed by the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say unreasonable systems create unreasonable people.
Sure. I buy that.
So there's people whose behavior at work is really bad. But you say to people who know them, what are they like out of work? Oh, great person out of work. Really nice. So you say, well, they're not being their authentic self at work.
Sure. The system crushed them.
They're driven to a behavior by the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you fix the system, those people blossom.
Yeah.
They turn into a different person.
Yeah. They like their work better and more things happen and you see a whole other set of skills.
And suddenly they're happy and they're cooperative and they're creative. Mm-hmm. And I've just got so many stories of that happening. For me, the most rewarding aspect of DevOps is the impact on individuals that you see.
You know, I'm thinking back to Gene's own writings around this, the sort of third way aspects. And one of those things he says right in it is joy.
Yeah.
And I find that very interesting. I mean, it's one thing when you think in context of a startup and typically the unicorn types where they are defining new business. Mm. They are, you know, routinely analyzing customers and discovering new things. But to see that in government?
Yeah. That's right. To see people who are really happy.
Right.
And deriving happiness from their work. And he talks about humane IT as well. So I interviewed a number of CIOs for my presentation tomorrow, including ones who aren't currently my client. And one of them is a big bank in New Zealand who have done a huge transformation. And one of the things I picked up from them about what they did was this humane aspect. They were wonderful about the people who didn't want to come along.
Interesting.
And they pushed this strong message. If you don't want to be part of this, if you feel it's not for you, then we will thank you for not wanting to be a part and we will support you in every way possible for you to exit the organization.
But you are going to exit the organization.
Yeah, you're going to exit the organization, but we're going to be really nice about it.
Right. There's no reason not to be.
Yeah, we're not going to treat you with contempt and aggression because you refuse to join the party.
Right.
We're going to make it easy for you to leave. We're going to reward you to leave. We're going to offer all sorts of support services for you to leave. Mm-hmm. We're going to be kind and gentle about exiting you from the organization.
Well, that just beats down the us versus them thing, right? That you don't have to be fully on board to still be a valued part and to still be treated with some respect.
So things like that do sort of restore your faith in human nature when organizations do behave that way, you know. And DevOps is hippie, man.
It is a little hippie, isn't it? There's a whole lot of warm fuzzy running
there
around.
There is, and that's what I love about it.
Right.
That it's human, it's humane, and it's caring, and it's full of weird stuff that challenges all our old beliefs. And it's a hippie movement.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's interesting to take a remarkably conservative group, like a government group, which just by its nature has to be, you know, is expected to be efficient. This is the people's money they're spending. You know, they have every reason not to be interested.
So, do you know what makes the difference? Results.
Funny. So, is it still pick out a tiger team, the right people to run one project in a different way to sort of create a demonstration culture?
Yes and no. Sometimes, I mean, you can get proof points just with, let's try some of this with a team.
Sure.
Right. You don't have to, and let's have a whole lot of little, many points alight, right? Let's have many little experiments going on around the place. Let's not, you don't, one model is to isolate a team and have them pilot the whole, all of it.
Right.
And that's fine. That is a good proof point. But equally, let's have just lots of little experiments. Let's just achieve one thing. Let's take a group of developers and fund them differently, so they can, they're not spending half their time trying to go and get money for the work they do.
Right. Or,
you know, you can just, and then take that to management. Say, look, so, but also just looking over the fence. They look over the fence at other organizations, and the proof of DevOps is just, as I say, we've got this bank in Wellington that have done a huge transformation. In fact, several of the banks have. We've got the Ministry of Social Development that I talked about. All the other ministries are now looking at them going, we want what they're having. Right?
Without the catastrophic event first?
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully without the catastrophic event. But they're all going, yeah, we want some of that.
That's interesting.
And so we're having to manage the level of visitors coming in wanting to just touch the magic.
You're having the observer effect that you looked at so much, you can't actually get anything done.
Correct. So, you know, that's what I mean about results. It's not just internal. They just look at other organizations and see what they're achieving. And for me, that's the difference with DevOps, you know, is that it works.
Right. You actually get results. How much of that public conversation reinforces the culture to not just keep these conversations amongst the organization, but to go out and do it in public as well?
Oh, yeah. So that's part of the sharing thing. CALMS, right, is also external sharing. And it's interesting that a lot of these DevOps organizations are incredibly generous with their time. They are quite evangelical. They do open up and spend time going to talking to other organizations and allowing others to come in and see what remarkable. Like, I went to one session, which was one bank visiting another bank, their direct competitors, to see what they're doing with DevOps. And they were sharing, and they were open, and they were telling them about the transformation.
Because you would think that these are the practices that have a competitive advantage.
Yeah. Like,
why wouldn't you want to keep this to yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know why that works. I mean, and I could see why government, if one government and the other was going to speak, they have a different constituency. It's not going to be as much of a conflict. But a government talking to a bank about methodology, that's interesting to me.
Or a bank talking to a bank.
Yeah.
You know, it's just extraordinary.
Yeah, it's all those different levels of conversation.
Very generous. And that's part of that hippiness, man.
But is that, the question is the culture you create result in generous behavior, or do you need generous behavior to get that culture?
No, I think that the cultural transformation creates new generosity. You know, these are outcomes of the transformation. Mm-hmm. Some of these organizations were not
that
nice
way before.
Become nice.
I also think, especially in IT, this willingness to explore our failures.
Yeah.
Because there's an awful lot of organizations where failures tend to be career-limiting events, and so they're suppressed as much as possible. And you really can't get better if you're not willing to explore those things. So I wonder if the generosity element is just part of being willing to talk about what didn't work as much as what did.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting challenge, and you get very much a top-down thing. Like, I've noticed here in London, the folks that are here are pretty senior. You know, it seems to be that we are talking to culture at the senior level to see if it'll push down.
Yeah.
Where just a few years ago, it was much more the person in the field trying to find a way to get better.
And I worked in service management for a decade. And very hard to have a strategic conversation around service management.
Sure.
Should be easy. I mean, it is a strategic approach, but you get driven down into operations.
It's a cost control thing, right? These are necessary evils. It's like you're a janitor.
Yeah.
Instead of changing light bulbs and sweeping floors, you keep people from complaining the tech doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. And which is how it got driven. Whereas, you know, it in theory, it's a strategic life cycle, transformational, service thinking, outside in, customer centric. You know, it's all that stuff, but it just never... It struggled and it was always, and I think there were two elements missing in the ITIL world and the service management world. There was the lack of the cultural, the understanding of that you're changing people, So I was very process centric. And the second thing was lack of a systemic thinking. So DevOps drives us to understand the whole system and the whole flow, the whole value stream, and to think at a systems level. And it's buried in the ITIL books. But the way it was approached by most people was to think about each ITIL process separately, change management, isolation. And that just drives siloing, right?
Yes. And it's easy to interpret the way ITIL is presented into a set of executed processes rather than as a culture of service.
And not so none of it looks at the way it was executed, none of it looks at the whole flow of value from blah to blah.
Right.
And whereas DevOps, that's what it's all about, is the flow of value. And so to me, those are the two big differences that make it so successful, is the human aspect and the systems aspect.
I agree. And there's a whole other show to be done on DevOps and ITIL side by side. Yeah. I think I'll say that for another time. Rob England, super fun to talk to you. Thank you so much for spending the time.
Thanks, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.